I'm going to paint, you know, a Harlequin army to museum quality. Let me tell you what didn't happen.
To Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Evening, ladies and gents.
Red Powell.
Hello.
And special guest Tanya Gates.
Hi everybody.
Hello, thank you for joining us today, Tanya.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
So if people don't know, they may recognize your voice from 40K Today.
Yes.
Now you've got a new thing going on that you launched direct to YouTube, I believe. Be Nice,
yes.
Roll Dice.
Yeah, so I sort of started like a 40K talk show where I invite guests to come on for 30 to 40 minute chats about different topics regarding wargaming in general. So I've released one episode so far, and then I think by the time this podcast airs, then the second one will be active as well.
All right, well, check them out. Well, I'll put links in the show notes if people want to. But over the course of the show, we're going to have our normal 40K chats like we do. And then towards the end of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about representation in the hobby. And I thought, you know, it might be great to have you on to assist us with that.
I would be absolutely honored to do so.
Great. Well, during the last episode, we mentioned that we're going to talk about the Warhammer 40K app.
That was specifically the Army Builder, wasn't it? Because that just got launched last week.
Yeah, so it's the Battleforge section of the Warhammer 40,000 app is now live and has gone through, over the course of it being released last week, we've had another major update that has added even more functionality, I believe even more functionality, to this app. And our running gag on the show is that Adam does not have the app, and he still does not have the app.
I had to continue the tradition just for the value of the meme. I'm not allowed to get it yet.
I'm with you on that. I also don't have the app.
Well,
just to point out, I mean, so Tanya, and I'm with you, don't worry, I'm with you on this, and I have the app, but when was the last time that you played Tanya 40K?
The last time I played? I played in a small RTT last month.
Okay, and Adam?
I played 3 days ago on the weekend.
Okay, so 3 days ago, how cool would it have been, Adam, if you could just pick up your phone and flip through your app to it instead of having to have, you know, one of three different books, for example, or something like that? It's just, it's so crazy because not only can you flip from a data sheet, you can go straight into the rule book. And everything automatically updates as far as all the FAQs and everything. It's just such a remarkable thing. It's so convenient. I'm trying to figure out how, if you play, that maybe just consider the amount of, like we said, you know, supporting between the company that's making it. And don't get me wrong, we haven't talked on I'm not talking about the Battleforge deal. I'm just talking about the app in general. I think that there's more to this Battleforge piece. But I am saying, in regards to the app, I think that there's a huge amount of convenience to it. And that it is all those codexes you're buying, Adam, you know, they have codes in the back, so you can just upload them into the app.
Yeah, just for briefly for folks that may not be aware of it. So you download the app, and the app is it's a monthly subscription, and that is something that causes people a little freeze up, and I don't blame them. Look, man, these are your hard earned dollars, and you don't want to be investing them in something that's not absolutely stellar perfect. And the app is not perfect right now. It came out a little premature, but because of the demand, and we are sort of beta testing the app right now, and that's not for everybody.
That's true. And that's fair. Mm. And by no means, there shouldn't be any pressure that you should feel compelled to. But I do think that it has a lot of convenience attached to it.
And I like the fact that you log in, you redeem your code in the book, and then that imports your purchase, unlocks the content in the app, so you can look up all your army list entries and stuff.
I think it's got a huge amount of potential. I am literally only joking. I will be getting the app at some point. I don't think there's any reason for me not to. And yet, I think the scope and the amount of commitment GW is going to be putting into it, it's only going to get better from here. And as for when people decide to get involved, I think that's just up to personal preference. Like you said, customers are going to really drive when they want to get involved with it. I really thought Reb was going to give me a patented Adam Camilleri loaded question. It'd be like, oh, Adam, imagine if you could, like, you know, rock up to a game and have all your rules. Wouldn't that be a good idea, hey?
Put you on the spot real quick for the AP of some obscure weapon, you know?
It just shows that Red is just much a nicer version of me.
Well, it's, you know...
Not that you're a version of me, you know.
With Tanya here, and, you know, Tanya, if you don't have the app, it's kind of hard to hold Adam's feet to the fire, right?
Thank you, Tanya.
I'm here to save the day.
You'll protect me from these vicious individuals.
But so
slanderous.
You brought up a good point, though. So if your codex isn't out yet, maybe you don't get the app yet because importing the codex doesn't...
Well, but the next part is that all the 8th edition materials in there without necessarily having to buy it. So every single psychic awakening and all that. So if your codex hasn't come out, technically all your old material is actually still in there. And so it's more the matter that to get the new stuff, you actually have to, you know, buy the new stuff. And that's where things will start to phase out. So, like, for example, you know, before Space Marines and Necrons dropped, you could see everything in the app without any issue. And then as soon as those codexes dropped, like, if you didn't buy the Space Marine codex, then now all the Space Marines are suddenly locked out from the codex. But that, so there's a cool aspect to that, that we were able to reach back and look at all the different material. And again, all the FAQs auto update. But yeah, it's definitely something that, again, if and it does, you know, there's a subscription fee attached to it, and understanding that there's other apps out there that people can turn to. But this is, I mean, this, as soon as an FAQ drops, they update it in the app. And as said, there's going to be material, you know, leaning forward into this Battleforge deal. And it's not like I'm sitting here working for GW or anything. I just think that there's aspects to it. And I think that the aesthetic, I mean, Paul, if you got a chance to look at it,
I'm looking at it right now.
Good, yeah. Right? I don't think it looks bad. I think that there's definitely more work to be done, and that's okay.
Well, the thing that I like about it is there's pictures of the models when you're going to select your units, you know, and so you get to kind of see that. There is, it's smooth. How you select things is large enough to where you know you're not having to really, you know, maximize or squint or anything or whatever. It's, you know, it's pretty well laid out.
Well, and with the Battleforge piece, I mean, when they released it, and this was kind of like the expectation management, when they released the app, the Battleforge aspect to it, they essentially released a survey right next to it that said, hey, this is totally like, we're still working on this thing. And if you find any issues or see any problems, like, feel free to contact us and put it in a survey form that they had. And they offered a month free, so I didn't think that was too bad of a deal on top.
Well, it is. Yeah, right. 1 month free to get in there and see if it's the right for you or to provide some feedback. Mm. I mean, it's not bad. Look, they're obviously trying. I think that there was, you know, maybe we can get them on. Maybe I tried just appeal to maybe get them on to talk about it a little bit. But I think they had some issues early on, and then when when you compound it with the issues the world is facing right now, I think it just makes everything kind of feel worse. But I think the fact that we have something, and it's functional, and we've already seen, like, one thing, and this could have been there, and I may have just didn't find it originally, but now after the update, there's a seemingly a pretty easy way to export an army list, like in a text document format, or like you can share it, like I'm on an iPhone, so I can share it to chat groups the same way I would, you know, share a message or anything.
Yeah, I think they originally had a sharing portion to it. I think that they did refine it, though. And I know that, like, for example, for those of us that use BCP or process like that, I know that BCP is now accommodated towards being able to take that downloadable format and make it verifiable in BCP, so you can use that same deal in there, which is cool.
And I know for some of the larger events in the world, they've made some inroads into having standardized tournament like list formats, mm-hmm. in order to really, it allows us to get really deep into the data of what people think are good, what are fringe units, what do you do, it's an underperforming, overperforming, et cetera, et cetera. And this, I think, is just one more step towards just like a truly unified list format for events. And well, for everybody, actually, that doesn't need to be for events.
Well, I think we're all disappointed that it's not perfect right now.
Yeah. People, as a customer myself of G-Dubs, not necessarily the app, I don't like paying for things that I don't feel like are as good as I think they should be for the cost. But that's just a value assessment people have to make based on their own their own expectations, I guess. And literally, the only reason I haven't got it now is literally a meme. Is a single for a Wednesday afternoon when I record with my mates.
You know, you got to ask yourself, do you want to go on this journey with them as they figure it out, or do you want to buy a finished product at the end? And I think that's, there's no wrong answer right there.
Mm, absolutely right. I always have this little conundrum in my head. I think it's a layover from when I was a very poor student trying to play Warhammer 40K and getting, well, it was fantasy at the time. But every time a new codex came out or a new something I felt like I needed to own, I always had to ask myself, do I buy this or do I buy more models? Can I afford to?
That's an important debate right there.
I mean, G-Dub's still getting the same amount of money because back then my budget was like...
Well, your hobby budget. Yeah, is your hobby budget.
Yeah. I'll eat into my utilities and my rent budget before I eat into the hobby budget.
That is very fair. I can respect that. But I do like the fact that as soon as you get that book in your hand, you can go and redeem the code and then it's in your app. And then, because I mean, look, I doom scroll, you know, like everybody else in the whole world, you know, and now sometimes I do that with pictures of models and looking at rules that are all within a couple of clicks of each other.
Yeah, I mean, was there a couple of missteps with this? I mean, there were some people, I mean, some of the doomsayers, which I don't really think, I didn't see it as that big a deal, were saying that when GW's promises of this being first month's free wasn't because you were still paying for the app. Like if you already signed up for the app, you were paying for that month. I'm not even sure if that was a real thing or if that just meant anybody who signs up to this now gets that they won't pay for this month, which would have been an easy enough thing to solve. So I wasn't
think
sure
it's
that
everybody.
Was a, as, that... Yeah, I wasn't sure that was as big a deal as they're making out. I'm not even sure it was a thing at all.
No, yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think it was a huge deal. I mean, I'm going back to your statement on like the quality point, and you know, some people, if you're familiar with like Steam and whatnot, like you know, when it comes to early access games, I mean, that's essentially what this is to a certain extent, right? It's an unfinished product, and it was when it was originally brought up, it was something that maybe people thought was going to be a much more complete deal. And I don't know if people felt like it was initially advertised as kind of an early access product. And I think that's fair in some regards.
Well, some things I like about it, it actually functions pretty smooth. I haven't noticed any weird like shutdowns or anything like that. It's ad-free unless you count the pictures of the models, which...
Yeah. I think that the only new thing that people are working through, and again, that we go back to the early access piece, is updating the app, is that a lot of times when like a new codex comes out or even the newer material that's happening right now, like people are having to just go in and make sure that the app is updated, which I mean, to certain points, you know, there are apps that auto update themselves and it is what it is. It's technology. I'm not going to make excuses necessarily
for it. That seems like a weird complaint to have.
It's, I mean, you know, sometimes your apps update themselves. And sometimes you got to go in there and force it. And I get it.
I don't know. I don't know if I can. I can give a lot of grace on people's opinions of this because it is. I mean, really, you cannot deny that this is unfinished, and that there are still some bridges they have to cross to get this to where it is perfect and worthy of a monthly fee. So you got to think, like, we are microtransactions and that kind of stuff and main and like subscription fees, like we live in a world where that's very common.
Yeah.
But because it's so common, the bar is kind of high for the quality of those services, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a quality of life. You want, you know, you could go the route of saying first world problems or what have you, but there's definitely a quality of life aspect to it.
Oh, dude, we are totally talking about first world problems. We were talking about a luxury game and then what is, you know, a tenth of the cost of one box of Space Marines per month.
Guys, are we entitled?
No, well, okay, yes, but no. So the reason no is because we're still having to buy this stuff, and like there is like when you look at it in the context of like all the other things that are available out there that you know do that are some kind of you know mobile service or whatever, and you know again it's, you kind of look in the context of you need it to work. But I also appreciate the fact that this is a huge undertaking, and the complexities of the game, the complexities of international users and that kind of stuff. I mean, maybe I don't want to make it sound like it's easier than it really is. It's probably very difficult. And what we've seen is they're going to make it work. I have absolutely ultimate confidence in the folks that are behind this. Mm. If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it makes sense.
It does.
I think there's a lot of people that, that court will remain out.
Yeah. And that's Yeah. I mean, no, it needs to work, and it needs to be everything that is promised to be. And everything that should be. You know, we need the rules in here. We need quick and, you know, fast army things. We need a clear way to communicate what those armies are to our opponents if we're playing in match play games.
Wouldn't it be amazing if they just, like, produced a QR code that you could scan, and you're like, oh, that's what my opponent is playing.
Oof, wow, what an idea. And yeah, and that just put your opponent's list into your list builder, and you just see what they've got straight away.
I'm going to write that down right now.
That's crazy. Love it.
Yeah, if they put that kind of functionality into it and it worked, you might get me on board for it.
You know, if you think to some other that I can think of, you know, and BCP's working into it, you know, they have like the built-in scorecard, you know, like a gaming aspect to the app. If you could do that, and you could... What if you could real time track, you know, so you've got your list, you can, whether it's a Wi-Fi or even like a local deal, that you can essentially run a game against someone else and you guys share a clock and you can see each other's list in proximity, so on and so forth. All of these things are not new. There are other actual games that have apps that do this, like, and I'm not saying that the games themselves have succeeded, but I have seen models of apps that have worked in these cases. Privateer Press had a pretty good one that you could actually watch. You could see the health of units in other people's armies and stuff like that.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I have typed that down and noted that Tanya suggested it, and I'm going to submit that on your behalf, if you're okay with that.
Thanks, Paul.
I think it's excellent. But it really, honestly, though, it's an app, and you know, it's not gonna. I mean, but you're right. I think to Red's point, it's a quality of life improvement that at this point, because it exists, we think we deserve. So let's make it right.
I mean, it is the future. Like the amount of technology, despite like Warhammer is a pretty like not medieval game, but you know, you don't need a lot of technology to play a game 40K. Like you need a range ruler, something to measure a distance, and a flat place to play on. If not even friggin' flat, actually, and someone to play against, man, and you're good. Like yeah, you don't one, need much one of technology.
One of the first emails I ever got, like as once the show you know started to pick up a little bit, was someone in the military who was out in the desert, and he's like, I listened to the show, and we play 40K with bottle caps on the ground.
Yeah. Well, dude, my first dreadnought was a can of soft drink.
Nice.
You know? Lord knows my you know 11-year-old self couldn't afford it, and my opponent he had the killer can the death dread, the cardboard death dread.
The cardboard cutout, yeah.
And I had a can of Coke.
Legal to this day.
He won. The death dread won.
What was it?
Aluminium.
It was a beast.
Ain't nothing.
Yeah. So you're right. We can break this down to. You know, rudimentary things, and just play with the rules. But that's foreshadowing. That's going to come up later in the conversation.
Mm.
So hold tight. Yeah. So look, I do think the app is good, and I mean, I use it. I have it, and since I have begun experimenting with making army lists in it, and I see the potential.
The where I was going with what I was saying a moment ago was that even though we don't need much technology to play the game, the sky's the limit on what we can include.
Oh, fair.
Mm. And this stuff is amazing.
Oh, like that. There's that rifle ruler app that's out.
Oh, that thing's cool.
Yeah,
that thing's
I can never seem to like make it work exactly. I guess a little clunky for me. I'm like, give me that tape measure.
Do you want to tell people what that is?
Oh yeah. So yeah, it's an app you can download, and it has uses your camera to do measurements for you, like radius. Like you could zero in on a model and click and figure out how wide its aura is. And it, you know,
it's actually
it does
cooler
overlay.
Than that, because it's augmented reality. So it actually like creates the board digitally.
Yes.
We all know our reality isn't good enough. So exactly. I'm all aboard.
No, I mean, I think that it's pretty crazy concept. And like when you start looking at it, I mean, you know, because that's all from take like your, I mean, we're, you know, jumping ahead a little bit, I guess, futuristically. I mean, you know, if you've seen Google Glass and whatnot, you take this into account. You know, most cases that you're playing around with rightful ruler, it's pretty cool. I mean, you can put it on your phone and whatnot. But if you think about putting it into like Google Glass or something like that aspect, and it can get pretty awesome in the scope that like your entire board could be laid out. Like you said, Tanya, you know, it's a digitally constructed board. board in front of your face and all of your models, you know, we sit here and we do some of this stuff in our head in regards to threat ranges and how far a model can move and then possible, you know, possibility of charges. I mean, if you imagine all these overlapping threat ranges across the board from all of your models and your opponent's models, if you eventually got to a point, and it's not there yet, but you get to a point and you could set whether it's generic ranges or specific models ranges. I mean, it could be pretty, think of how that would augment your calculating, like how you do your calculations.
Well, I think we're on the precipice of better and better things coming out of these apps. And, you know, look, I'm along for the journey. I don't mind saying that, but I can see some, it's a fair criticism by some of the folks that aren't quite there yet, but, and I'm not even saying they should take it. You don't have to, I mean, you know, look, you see all these other apps, like how hard is it? Well, I don't know. I'm not an app coder. I don't know. I don't know the complexities of everything, but I think that it's going to get good. It's already good and it's going to get better in my opinion. And I agree. I think several Bald Angel lists with it. So I've said Bald Angel. Well,
it did. How long was that in? How long was that into?
It was pretty good. That was pretty far. I was surprised.
Yeah. I wanted your forged narrative. Your forged narrative bingo card. Punch that hole in it.
22 okay. minutes in, and here we are.
We got a sub 25 minute Blood Angels reference. There we go. Okay.
Okay. Look, I can see how the people are resistant, and it is a good reason. But I think that this will only get better with time. So don't write it off. Keep yourself open to the improvements that are coming down the pipe.
We're just at the tip of the iceberg. Like, I think this is still just the beginning for things of this ilk, and they'll just get bigger and better as we go.
Indeed. So you mentioned that, Adam, that you were in a tournament this past weekend.
Yeah, I played in RTT.
What did you,
I played Dark Angels. My first tournament of 9th edition. Pretty exciting. Very happy.
Well, you took down the crown.
Yeah, the RTT crown. You know, I mean, technically people are making it out like it's a big deal because there's nothing else to make into a big
That's
deal
right. We're begging for scraps for any type of scene at the moment.
I'm getting that delicious default attention. It's fantastic.
Look, George, bask in the glory of the top spot.
Who would have thought the three redemptive dreads would be good? I mean, who could have envisioned being a list that would do well?
No one ever. You know?
Shocked. But shocked the world.
That goes into the fact that, you know, that everything now in Death Guard is a redemptive dread or a wave serpent.
Mm. Yeah, yuck. I hate that you point that out. Womp womp.
I know Death Guard's delayed. We don't know when it's coming out, but we can't play with these new rules. But you know, I sometimes like to build and paint on the news. You know, while I'm speculating, I'm like, oh, you know, I don't know if these three Blight Hollers are going to be good, but let me go ahead and paint them up.
They're going to be good.
Hey, well, look, I mean, really, even if they're not, you know, a month from now, I'll have three Blight Hollers.
But yeah, I actually do agree with the speculative painting. I've got five Ravenwing, Ravenwing added to regular land speeders that I'm like, fingers crossed, baby, it's our time to shine. I'm going to do the same with some Black Knights.
I've got a unit of Howling Banshees. I told you, you know, I mentioned this before, that have literally been in the foam for 15 years.
But dude, there's new models now. Like, you know, surely they've got to be good, right? Because GW only makes new models for things they're going to make good and want to sell. That's totally what they did with those guys.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Look, we can pine away, but that kind of brings me to you know, what I want to talk about in the hobby segment last week, but we didn't get to it, was that part of the drag of painting that people might not notice is how often you're switching in between pots or getting out or having to fish around. Like, if you're like me, you pull a bunch of paints off your rack and then they live on your hobby desk forever, cluttering up everything. And so when you go to reach for your lead belcher, you have to look at four other pots before you find the lead belcher.
That's just you.
It can't be just me.
It's just you.
It can't be just me.
Well, I'm definitely so not that way. Yeah.
But one thing that helps me though, what I've noticed is it's like cooking, you know, where you cook with the idea that you're going to have leftovers to take to lunch, you know, to work the next day or whatever. Is that it's just sometimes more efficient to do it all at once. And so when I've primed Mephiston Red on the 10 Assault Intercessors that are on my hobby desk right now, I also primed a Contemptor Dreadnought in the same way.
I definitely do that when I don't always do it when I'm undercoating, but I definitely don't when I'm airbrushing. If I'm ever airbrushing like a pre-shade or anything, I'm doing like 30 guys at once, or I'm doing none at all.
Yeah, because you have the extra tedium of cleaning out the air, having to clean the airbrush. Yeah,
exactly right. Setting up, cleaning down, washing everything.
Yeah, and but I like the idea of like, look, I'm already getting out. I know I'm gonna like on a Blood Angel Marine, I'm gonna touch Lead Belcher Black, probably two kinds of black, depending on how what detailed I want to be. Mephiston Red for touch-ups, gold for the sergeants. Then I've got some kind of flesh tone. Then I've got washes in between there. So what I'm up to, 6-7 paints already. Each one of those with a pot change, brush cleaning, all this kind of stuff. Why not just paint something else while I got it all out there?
Yeah, it's fair. Like a big revelation for me has been getting a wet palette, getting a proper wet palette, not just a sponge and some baking paper.
I feel attacked.
Man, a sponge and baking paper was good for me for like 5 years. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But like now I've got a really, really good one. I forked out a bit of cash and got a really nice one. And it's, the paints stay good between sessions. Like I can paint twice a week, and in 3 days between, I can crack it open and just go back to where I started, where I finished off. I feel that's a big strength for what Paul's saying. Like I can have 5 paints active on my palette at the same time and just go straight from base coating one model straight into base coating another one of the same colors in the same army.
I'm the holdout like you are with the app. I still do not have a wet palette.
Fair enough. Oh, old man Paul here with his fingers on the button. Yeah, well, that's fair. I can't all be perfect, Paul.
But you think it's that good, right?
Well, for me at least. Yeah, I won't say it speak for anybody else. It's been a revelation for me in the way I paint. Because sometimes, I don't know about you guys, like I'm a big passion painter. I'm passion everything, if you haven't been able to tell. But sometimes the passion for painting just ebbs and flows as it does. Sometimes I'll smash out a five-hour session one day when I've got on a Saturday when I've got nothing on, and I won't even notice like how much time's passed because I'm just that ingrained. Mm-hmm. Other times I'll say, okay, Adam, you've got to force yourself to paint for an hour, and I paint for 20 minutes. But being able to just pick up where I left off is nice. It I don't know, it's just like one less barrier to picking up the brush again.
That is nice. Sometime, I guess a couple of years ago, I went through a phase where, I had 30 plague bearers. And like, man, I might as well just paint them. I don't know when I'm going to use them. I have used them a couple of times, but I thought that if I just, I have nothing else to paint. I have nothing to prepare for. All my tournament lists are ready. I've got nothing to do. I might as well just paint these 30 models.
Yep.
And then at the end of that time of whatever it was, I'm going to paint 30 models. And I got those plague bearers done, I don't know, 3 days or something, because nice. They go pretty quick and I got a good system. But then I'd like, oh, I'm on a roll. Let me get through these blood letters. And that was like hitting a wall. I don't know what it was about them, but I just couldn't get through them. So instead of giving up, though, I still said, I'm going to get 5 done a night. And then about a week and a half goes by and I've got 30 blood letters.
I feel like for me, I try to paint everything above tabletop standard, but I do like large blobs of infantry. So like right now I am painting 38 orc boys. I know it's an odd number, but that's what I have. So I'm just doing all of what I have left because I do a few test models or whatever. And so as I'm doing them on the assembly line, I also have other like something bigger on the go at the same time that goes with the army. That's like the same kind of colors, if that makes sense. So like if on because like it takes me about 4 hours to do one infantry model. So times 38, that's a lot of hours. So if I just one day I'm like, oh, I just can't look at these boys today, then I could just go and I can like work on my death dread or whatever else I have on the painting table. But that's sort of how I break it up. But I do like to do like a bunch of points of like the same sort of like color scheme in a row before moving on to something else.
Is that because of that thing about breaking out the paints or down, or just because if you get frustrated with one particular, like you don't want to paint any more teeth, so you go over to the death dread?
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah, because like everything that I do, right? So like all the skin on my orc boys is all glazed, right? So it's like 8 layers of paint to achieve what I want on that skin. Well, that takes a few days. I may not want to pick up another infantry model after like doing skin for 3 days, So then I just move on to something big. And I find on the bigger models, because it's not usually an assembly line, I can paint for like 15 minutes, half an hour, and I can actually see that I've done something on it. So sort of like that feeling of accomplishment just keeps me painting. Whereas if I just did like blobs of infantry with no breaks at all, I don't think that I would be motivated to keep going.
No, I got you. I mention it because, you know, we're getting into the holidays. And look, I hope people get some a little bit extra time off during this time. And, you know, if you were to choose to do that painting, you might come out of it with 30 extra plague bears on the other side of the holidays.
Yeah, it's a good call. I mean, I went through, about 6 months of lockdown this year? Well, to various degrees of lockdown. But, I was all like, I'm going to get so much painting done and all this stuff. And I got, bursts of inspiration and then a complete, lack of any enthusiasm whatsoever. So, the middle 4 months, I did zero painting.
Yeah.
Zero. The first month, I did an absolute bucket load. And then this last month, I painted those three Redemptors. Just bang, three Redemptors done. In 3 weeks, and I was super, super stoked. They come out real nice, but yeah, it's just I don't know. People paint differently.
There's got to be some phenomenon of that, like where the fallacy of enough time or something. I don't know. Red, help me out here. There's got to be a term for it.
I mean, first, you know, not just time management, but really,
you're lazy, Adam.
No, I mean, really, it's conceptually understanding time, space, and it goes into basic scheduling, right? And not saying that it's as easy as it sounds. It's a matter of pacing yourself
I think there's an actual phenomenon around it to where you believe that you have all this time. And so you're like, I'll get to it because I have all the time in the world. And then you turn around and your time is gone.
Oh, sure.
Leaving homework to the last minute.
Yeah. Procrastination.
Procrastination.
Maybe that's the phenomenon. Is this the simple procrastination?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Experience time, outside of procrastination, right? Which is just an inherent human thing. The idea of measuring time and whatnot, people just don't, if in some cases you do, but in a lot of times, you forget about it. You forget the exact amount of time associated with it. And you're like, oh yeah, I can do this in this amount of time, and whatnot. Sometimes it takes persistent reminding of that bias of exactly just how much time it takes to get it there. And quite often people continue to misjudge that. I really do think it comes down to pacing yourself.
Yeah. Oh, being realistic about your goals too. I mean, if you bite off more than you can chew, you could get frustrated. And so why am I even doing this to begin with?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Tanya, you said 38 orc boys, right? I mean, I'm looking at my 60 Necron warriors with the new gauze reapers that I have to paint up. I definitely am going to have to pace myself to get there.
I think you got to set realistic goals. You got to be like, what can I do? How many can I do in whatever time? Or how much time? When do I want them by? That's the best one way I do it. When do I want them by? Do I want them by Friday? Okay, that means I have to do 10 a day.
Yeah.
But if you don't need them by Friday, or you don't want to wait until the last minute to get them done, you got to do 15 by Thursday, a day by Thursday.
But even it was said with the glazes on skin and whatnot, the difference between, I've got 10 models, I'm going to pace myself over 5 over this period and 5 over this period versus I have 40 models and I'm going to pace myself in such a way. You just got to at what point do you really, you suddenly realize that you've just burnt yourself out even while you're trying to pace yourself?
Yeah. Orcs is one of those armies to where you can't. But I think we tend to say that horde armies are exhausting, but it really could be any amount of work or paint or that hobby challenge for any army. You got to figure out ways to trick yourself into making it not seem like a chore.
For sure.
I'm really I'd love to start referring to different painters as authors. There are the Stephen Kings of our world, and then there are the George R. R. Martins of our world, painting wise. Just somebody who's just prolific beyond expectations of prolificness, and then somebody who just kind of leave you all hanging. Perpetual unfinished projects. I know that's nothing new to us.
On Twitter and Instagram and stuff, I've seen some glorious models where the artists seem to just seemingly refuse to want to base them.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, because I don't know how you guys feel.
that resignation. I need to hear more about that.
I just feel like a model is not completed until it has a base.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Do you hold that against an artist who doesn't base if they choose not to?
I mean, I would still acknowledge that they are like highly skilled. I wouldn't hold it against them. It's just, right. Yeah, like for me, I wouldn't play it because that is not a completed model.
Yeah, I need to understand why. If they're going to do that, I need to like a real, I need a note from their parent that says why they are excused to do this.
From their parents.
You think that they come from like the D&D world?
That could be. I mean,
I painted a model for my friend for D&D, and I was like, okay, how do you want the base done? And he's like, the base. I was like, well, yeah, you know, like we could put some flock on it, or, you know, I could put some rocks on it. What do you want? And he's like, no, just paint it black.
I've done that for a buddy too. He had like this warforged with a green crystal sword, and that's where his inspiration stopped. I'm like, what exactly? How do you want the base? What do you material? He's like, just finish it. Give it to me. Yeah.
No, yeah. I mean, so yeah, outside of maybe the D&D correlation there, I will say, like, when I first got into it, I didn't understand, just because, you know, being newer to it, I didn't understand that basing was such an aspect to it. And I kind of didn't like initially how it kind of felt like I was being pinned down to commit to like a theme for the models. Because this was as we were like transitioning out of the like green flock like base, you know, like that's what everybody kind of did, kind of deal.
The golden age.
Yeah, and so
goblin green, baby.
Yeah, I was gonna say flock. Just goblin green.
Yeah, it really kind of threw me for a loop as I was like, well, I mean, okay, well, it does, because it really does so much for the model, right? Like it sets a lot of the tone in the environment that they're in. And like how it
gives a little frame. It's almost like a frame where it helps focus your eyes on the model, and you'll see things on the top of the model. You know, got the advice from the famous Chris Peach, faces and bases. Like you nail those two things on your model and everything else is forgiven.
Faces and bases, huh?
Yeah. That's what he says.
And he's I got taught hands as well. Hands in addition to faces and bases.
Oh, I mean, yeah. So, yeah.
But that might have just been my particular G Dub man's quirk. Maybe he's, you know.
I would not check his browser history.
Let's not go there, Adam.
Oh man. Well, I tell you what, we're talking about hobby. We can actually keep talking about hobby in a second, but let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about, I guess, hobby or 40K or something, and then we'll talk about the representation segment that we're discussed in the first part of the show.
Sounds good.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. I still got Adam and Red.
Hello.
And Tanya Gates.
Hello.
Welcome back everybody. Thanks for sticking with us. Please like, share, subscribe, leave some comments, 5-star reviews. Great. Give us a click. I don't know, ring the bell. What am I supposed to say here? I'm so terrible at this part.
I literally talked to my Instagram followers the other day about how I'm really bad at self-promotion, so I have no answers for you. I'm sorry.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We're in this together.
I got to say, Paul, I'm going to be really excited when you finally get that groove down. It's gonna sound good. I'm really feeling it. We're working on it. We're
a jingle. Maybe if I sang it.
Oh, man.
That can't possibly be bad, could it?
No, I don't think so.
I think that you should hire Steve Joel to sing you a jingle.
Oh,
see, that'll actually be good. We can't do that.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, it would actually be really good. It would be really good. Taking this up a level. We might be asking for 6-star reviews if we if we have that. Oh, well, anyway, this has been an interesting year. I mean, we're not ready for the end of the year retrospective or anything like that. We got a couple more weeks left, and we will actually put out shows every week. We're not going to skip any weeks. So, look, hope you enjoy it as we close out 2020. I know 2020 has been a challenging year for, I mean, dang near everybody, and more challenging for some than others. And thanks for sticking with us and listening to us every week. It means a lot.
What's the phenomenon when something feels ridiculously long and short at the same time? Have you got a term for that, Red?
Oh, my goodness.
Hold on. Putting you on the spot today.
I know. I'm pulling out my phenomena dictionary. One second.
Well, if anyone was going to have one. But yeah, this year feels like a month because I haven't done anything in it, and also feels like it's dragged on for 7 years. Does that make sense?
Because
I haven't done anything, it feels empty. It feels like it's only a month worth of things that have actually taken place. But then when I think about it, it just feels like forever.
Yeah. And I like it how people listening to us have probably shouted the names of these phenomena, the paradoxes.
I wish. Gosh darn it, you twits. It's Veridoclus is a syndrome.
It is.
Yeah.
it's Arkham's Razor.
Yeah. Arkham's Razor.
Oh, wow.
They're a Batman fan.
Oh, man. But yeah, we are going to have shows every week. So, yeah, keep checking us out. And it's been fun. You know, this year, stayed home a lot more often, which is the right thing to do, I think, and tried to get as much painting as I could get done. You know, I was trying to spend as many hobby hours as possible. And I've already started thinking about my resolutions, my hobby resolutions for next year. Because I want to make them attainable.
There's only so many Sangard you can paint, right?
I'll let you know when I hit that limit.
it's 30. The limit is 30. You can't take any more than 30.
But I'm sure you're going to get 50 options.
Or something. Exactly. I knew there'd be a reason that you'd want to have like 60 or something ridiculous.
And some you want, you know, that the death mask. Some you just want their faces.
Beautiful blonde boys they are.
Yeah. You might need two or three different banners. I'm not making this up.
I know.
That's what the sigh was for.
I'm trying to limit myself when I get stuck into some of the juicier. I've only got 10 Deathwing Knights, and yeah, I expect to change that. I would like to have 20. I don't know why I want to have 20, but I just do. But I'm not going to get more than 20. I'm like Paul.
So what are our different weapon configurations?
There aren't any. They just come with a mace and a shield, and the sergeant gets the flaily flail of goodness.
Oh, you can't switch up between the maces and...
For the Deathwing Knights, no. For Deathwing Terminators, you can have anything pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. Well, 20 is good. That's always going to be a healthy investment of points.
That's right. I do have 20 Deathwing Terminators, so yeah.
With some models, it's like, well, if I need more than 6 Thunderwolves, then I'm just not taking them.
That's fair.
I'll find another way. You know, if 9 Thunderwolves become the be all end all, then I'll try to have my skill compensate for those last 3 Thunderwolves.
How many Orc Boys you are planning to paint? Like, what is the Tanya Orc Boy limit?
I don't think there is a limit, honestly. This is just what I have right now, so I just wanted to like get them all done. But I really like tons of infantry. So yeah, the sky's the limit in terms of Orc Boys.
So the same sayings you can apply to Orc Boys can also be applied to tacos. They're all interchangeable, especially Green Tide.
So, thankfully, as a group, we have established that Orcs, Sanguinary Guard, and tacos can all be unlimited.
Yes. Yeah, they're...
I like this map. I'm okay with that.
Now, you know, if we were to have our 10 commandments of FTN, that would be one of them. The other one would be
tacos would be high on the list.
It would.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I haven't eaten pizza much this year. I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but I went out and I smashed pizza last night, and man, I feel really weird. I feel like super heavy. I haven't been able to go for a jog today. I have zero inclination to do anything today, and I blame the pizza. But then how can one blame pizza?
That does seem weird.
I almost always feel bad after pizza, so I try to really limit pizza.
I mean, that's crazy. There's a correlation here. No app.
Yeah.
Hate pizza.
I love pizza. It just does not love me.
Don't you tell me I hate pizza.
It's like this weird thing, like when you eat stuff that largely consists of bad stuff for you, and then you don't feel well.
Who would have thought?
I know.
It's got an ironclad constitution over here. Again, I bring on the hot wings and the...
Not sure what phenomena that's called, but I'm pretty sure it's a thing.
I realize that I went too far with my charged comments when I suggested anyone hate pizza, and I apologize.
We'll get pizza. Yeah. We'll go get pizza next time at LVO. Paul and Adam going on a date, going on a pizza date. LVO.
There's that Giordano's right there next to it.
Done.
Tanya, you and me aren't invited to pizza, I guess.
You guys have tacos.
We can get tacos, or we could do beer and wings.
There's a taco place right next to the pizza place. We just hit them both.
Bam.
Yeah, I can definitely put a lot of tacos away.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Where I was going with the resolutions and stuff, and even the hobby talk that we were at, is that, you know, don't bum yourself out because you're either not motivated or whatever. Like, just do what you can. And I think that's kind of like the motto for this whole entire year. And hopefully we shake it off going into the next year, is like, just do what you can. Do what the right thing to do is for you. And, you know, don't feel overly burdened by this stuff, the toy soldiers that don't ultimately matter.
Yeah, so I have not made, I didn't make a true hobby resolution last year, but I did the 2 years before that, and I didn't make them. So my hobby resolution last year was I wanted to paint every morning for an hour. And with like the few exceptions, like when I'm out of town going to tournaments, which I did a couple times, or, you know, really extenuating circumstances, I made that hobby resolution this year. So sometimes your resolutions aren't necessarily like number of models or do an entire army. It could be time-based or something like that.
Like my hobby resolution this year, I set one either last year or the year before. I was like, I'm going to paint, you know, a Harlequin army to museum quality. Let me tell you what didn't happen. But this year, I resolved to like more post and comment more post and follow more people on Twitter.
Yeah, that's nice and simple.
Yeah.
Is that just in general, or you mean in the community?
Only hobby. So my Twitter is all hobby folks. I don't follow anybody that, like, you know, it's only people that paint miniatures or talk about the game, or could be publishers of another game or something. They have to be in the hobby world, whether it be a video game or miniature game or board game or paint miniatures. That's where I can find. That's my whole feed is just folks that do that.
Twitter is like not something that I really understand. So I just started my Twitter account, like, I think 2 months ago or something like that. And I got so excited because my first follower was Paul Murphy. Yeah, that was amazing.
Look, you made the cut. That's, you know, I mean, obviously being an awesome person, but hobby related. So you get to be on the Twitter wall.
I was like, I'm going to be somebody someday. Paul Murphy is my first follower.
I'm going to like more posts and follow more people and engage with more folks. Because look, what is dropping a like? You know, it may mean like this, like you just said, a ton to somebody, but it's not a ton of effort for you, you know, so spread the joy around. Mm-hmm. And I actually will work that into my resolution for this. I think maybe now it's just become a habit at this point. Like, now I've conditioned myself to engage where I wouldn't either. I lurk like the best of them, you know, kind of thing, but I want to engage more and again, spread that joy around a little bit.
I mean, I feel like I built my Instagram around like engaging with people. So I find it really hard to like just find the time to just scroll through like my Instagram. I'm going to say Instagram because it's the one that I'm mostly on.
You're like a juggernaut on Instagram.
I enjoy Instagram. Yes, not bad. So for me, like actually like doing like the likes and stuff is really hard. So I choose to engage by actually like sharing my hobby stuff through my stories instead. I feel like I just like reach more people that way. And like, I really try to put out a positive message in there. So yeah, I can understand. I can understand like wanting to reach out and like touch more people in like a wholesome kind of positive way.
Well, I like, you know, with the, you know, look, I know the inclination of some people, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't talk about whatever you want to on Twitter. I'm just saying that I only follow people on Twitter that have the majority of their feed be hobby, because, you know, it's like a break for me. Like I can scroll through, you know, like Facebook and, you know, you run into all kind of things over there. Plus, you know, you feel like you're obligated to be, you know, have some friends with maybe some people that you don't relate to as much anymore kind of thing, but they're there and they post silly stuff. But on Twitter, it's like I can just scroll through and be inspired by some sweet memes about miniatures or some new weathering techniques or something that I didn't know existed. You know, that's what I use it for.
I do find that like the people who make like picture tutorials, the ones on Twitter are so much better quality in general than the ones on Instagram.
Oh, fair.
And I don't know why, but like, there's so many great hobby tips on Twitter that I feel like get lost on Instagram somehow.
I do not know how to use Instagram really well. Like, I think I've made 2 stories in my tenure there so far.
I feel like we should just like combine to make one super entity. I'll do all the Instagram stuff and you can do all the Twitter, and then nobody will be able to stop
us. Just figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hey, look, we might be onto something there.
It'd be fun anyway.
So if I can transition this a little bit, is that I mentioned that we wanted to bring up the topic of representation in our hobby on the show. And everyone's had as much warning as we can give them, you know, leading up to this. But something, you know, you get these rappers on Spotify. And, you know, we're on all aggregators, but Spotify still, you know, they want you to share this kind of stuff around with everybody. And over this last year, we have had a gigantic increase in listeners from Australia. And I'm
mystery.
Thinking, yeah. How on earth did that happen?
Yeah. We're just flummoxed.
You know, I was like, what happened? You know, so it means Adam and two of his friends also download the show now.
Straight, baby. Oh, I didn't even watch it anymore. It's like three people apart from me. It's crazy.
But it hit me. I was like, I mean, representation on this show from, you know, someone. I mean, heck, you know, for all we know, Adam could be faking the accent. He's not. He is.
Oh, man. Someone create that alter ego. someone make that meme.
But I mean, through no, and I'm not saying that we don't like intentionally try to appeal to 40K players no matter where you are, but I can tell you that we have not made any specific efforts to court Australian listeners. I love Australian listeners. We've shared some funny Australian facts over the years of the show, and it always is met with some interesting comments from folks. But this past year specifically, we've seen a real spike in the number percentage of people that were listening the previous year. And I mean, the thing is, like, well, I mean, duh, you know, because we have someone from Australia on the show. And so that got me thinking, it's like, how powerful is just representation in general to someone's willingness to listen or engagement with things and our hobby in particular. And I also am aware enough that maybe the three, me, Red, and Adam, would probably have a difficult time speaking to it just if it was just us. And so, Tanya, thank you very much for coming on and lending your voice and your experiences to the show and to this segment.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's one of the things that I'm quite passionate about is like making the hobby nicer for new women coming into it, because when I first started, it wasn't that nice. So I'm trying to like mitigate that for the next generation of ladies coming up.
Well, we see things, you know, like, and I'm part of it has to be because, you know, we as dudes don't do the best job of interacting, and you know, and we kind of maybe have seen historically, like the game store is, I mean, maybe like a boys club, you know, right or wrong. I mean, I think that's bad, but I can certainly see in the past how either that was just accepted or the way it was by default. And maybe we just had been too comfortable for that. And so when the landscape and the culture of the game started changing, maybe that game store has been the slowest to catch up.
I think probably.
This is my perception. Like, look, I'm coming at it from the complete other side. The not, you know, I don't have your frame of reference, and so I'm just trying to think of things, you know, that may be the cause, the culprit, or things that we could, where we can challenge some of our subconscious biases.
I think that in general, this hobby is. This is going to sound bad, but I think in general, this hobby is maybe not something that's going to appeal to a majority of women. And I think that that's 100% okay. I think in the past, the hobby hasn't exactly been a very nice place for women. And because of that, it has a bad reputation, even though things are changing now. And I think that women are starting to claim their spaces a little bit more. So they're starting to get out there into the, like, gaming clubs and gaming stores and just making themselves more visible. But I mean, I still get a lot of messages from women who are like scared to go to the hobby store, and they've never been in one before. It's not like they've personally had any bad experiences or anything. It's just there's social anxiety associated with it.
I think there is no denying or skirting the fact that for the longest, well, that ever since nerdism has been a part of culture, it seems to have been something that's predominantly been thought of as a male dominated section of society. I'm not always saying that's always been the case, but I think that is certainly the assumption. I'm really interested in ways that we can turn that. I certainly am somebody who I'd want to make our community and our hobby as appealing and as open and inviting for anybody who wants to play it, regardless of who or what they identify as. I'm really interested to hear any ideas you've got, Tanya, that people can adopt at home or in their own little hobby groups to make their spaces and their groups as comfortable and welcoming as possible.
I think that there's two things. So I think that we have to acknowledge that women coming into the hobby space need the same amount of attention as men get, right? So you don't want to ignore them, but you also don't want to be too friendly at the same time. Like, does that make sense? Like, you don't want to like overwhelm them with excessive amounts of kindness and attention. Mm-hmm. You kind of just want to treat them just like any other person who might be walking in. And even online spaces, I see this sometimes too. Like, a woman will be like, oh, I'm new to the hobby, and like ask a question. And then like there'll be like 1,000 comments on.
Yeah, yikes.
On that's a little overwhelming. That's overwhelming.
Yeah.
It can be. It can be.
999 folks may be well intended, but it just said, you saying that may set a difficult or an overwhelming message. Is that fair?
Mm.
Yeah, like sometimes it is overwhelming, and I think it, even though the intentions are very good, I think sometimes it still shows women that you are still seen as like some sort of special unicorn, you know, this like rare creature. And like these people, they mean very well, but it still sort of makes the women feel other, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
Yeah. Like rather than feeling just like you're the same and equal to anybody else, which in truth is my absolute belief, it's giving you every indication of the opposite.
Right. Because I feel like if a man made the same post on the internet or whatever and said, hey, I'm new to the hobby and I have this question, I don't feel like there would be 1,000 comments on that.
Someone probably call him a noob.
And then move on with their life.
Yeah. Read a book, noob. And
get good, scrub. And then also at the same time, women who are coming into a very male-dominated hobby space may not be comfortable with like the male power hierarchies that are in there. So like where you might at the table be, you know, sort of poking fun at your opponent, or maybe like giving them a hard time about things, and it's totally harmless and it's just sort of like your relationship, that kind of thing is not going to necessarily feel good for women. Until you've really developed like a stronger friendship with her.
Yeah, I just thinking about that, I'm thinking about the way me and my friends interact. We treat each other horribly, and knowing that that's just how we treat each other, and that's just our friendships and our connections. And you know, no one's hurt or bothered by that. That's just our thing. But yeah, I can see how from the outside looking in, that would be terrifying, intimidating.
Right. It is super, super duper intimidating. But also, like, sometimes when I am at the game store and I am playing with my friend / coach, people who might overhear that relationship might actually think that we dislike each other quite a bit, but actually we're quite fond of one another. But we've developed this relationship over like 5 years or something like that. So, but women aren't necessarily going to build that type of relationship very easily.
Yeah. Some sound advice right there, I think.
Well, I do like that so far. Well, none of that stuff seemed particularly gendered. I think that's all just amazing advice for anybody hoping to create an inclusive and stable, welcoming community.
Yeah, and I feel in terms of like the game store itself, I don't have any. Well, that's not true. I don't have any bad experiences at the game table in person that had anything to do with my gender.
Okay.
Right. So I don't know, like, I've heard awful stories about women like entering game stores and having a bad time. I've never had that. So I can't really speak to that so much. I would say, I guess, if a woman is concerned that something like that might happen, I think it's really good to just go in and before game night and maybe scope out the feel of the place, maybe talk to the store owner or staff member and sort of feel it out. But like, my local game stores are pretty awesome, so I don't know.
Yeah, really. Well, you obviously hear things and stories and people's experiences, but yeah, I'd like to think that they're becoming fewer and far between, and that the game is, in our hobby culture in general, is becoming a lot more accepting and inviting of these of anybody, you know, gender aside.
It's going in the right direction for sure. Like even from like when I started out like six or seven years ago, the culture's a lot more vibrant, accepting, and just nice in general now than it was back then.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Is like I feel it, but again, I'm not. Open to feeling the same way. I want to know what your perception was. Is it, do you feel like it is actually moving in a good direction? And do you get a sense that maybe people are trying harder, or maybe just the world is changing a bit?
I think it's everything. Yeah, I think that the world is definitely changing. And I think that people are also trying. And on top of that, I think that people aren't afraid to like shake up the social structures that exist already. So like if there is like a power or dominance hierarchy in a game group, I feel like more people are willing to step up and be like, hey, that's not cool, or you know, just sort of like knock those boundaries down so that everybody's sort of standing on a level sort of playing field.
And I think that's a pretty important aspect, really, you know, having the emotional intelligence and how the awareness in regards of being able to read the room, you know, read the situation a little bit and understand when people are uncomfortable and whatnot, and being able to speak up on behalf of each other. Because, you know, in certain environments, like people might not feel comfortable doing that. And, you know, for the interest of the community and trying to make sure that everybody, whether it's having their representation or just being able to be, you know, like I totally acknowledge the point on sometimes it can probably feel like people are trying, maybe sometimes people try too hard, but at the same time, I really do think it's important that people be able to look out for one another and be able to help one another feel comfortable in a place that you're supposed to be able to enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of like women are just like anybody else. So, some women are going to be extroverts. Some women are going to be introverts. The introverts are still going to struggle because of the social aspect of the game. Extroverts probably are going to struggle a lot less with that. I personally feel like it is through the efforts of women choosing to be visible that things are changing, if that makes sense. So
it does. Yeah. It's like, and look, and you, I think you may have mentioned this earlier, is that it, like, we play a game of futuristic space warfare with barbarians, and like the narrative, I mean, is not typically something that may attract female players to the game, and that's completely okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If the ones that actually want to, how do we make it easier for them?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so for me, whenever I see like a woman come in through for game night, or if I see a woman join our Facebook group or whatever, I always sort of like feel like I am the ambassador, one of the ambassadors for the group. So I will ask them if they would like to have a game instead of waiting for them to ask me. Just because I don't know, like, if I don't know that person yet, I don't know. They could be an introvert, and that making that first step might be really difficult for them. So I feel like if somebody from the group says, hey, do you want to have a friendly game? I feel like that's just, it's like an invite in. So they don't have to like skirt around like the extremities of the group, right? You're bringing them into you. I think that is really important. I also feel like you can't force women into it. So I actually get asked a lot, like, oh, I want to get my girlfriend into the game.
My girlfriend expressed the slightest interest in 40K, so I bought her an entire Sisters of Battle army. Help me.
She humaned me for 12 seconds. How do I make this? How to make my dreams come true?
Yeah, and I feel like if she hasn't expressed interest in the painting aspect of it, or if you've told her like the entire backstory of the Horus Heresy, right? And she's like, oh, that's really cool. I feel like maybe that's an opening, right? And not if she's like, that's cool, honey. But like, really, like she's like, that's an awesome epic story. Like that's a woman who you possibly could bring into the hobby in some way. If she has no interest whatsoever in what you're doing, it's probably best to just let that go.
Fair enough. Can I talk about models, like the models on you know, figures that we play? So, I mean, you're talking about painting orcs, and I don't think the orcs have a single female figure in the line.
I don't think they have a single male figure in the line either.
I was about to say.
Well, there you go. So that leads into my point of things like, did that play a factor in your choice to play them at all? Like, what actually got you to play that? And do you feel like there needs to be models and stuff on the table that, you know, look more like you to keep you interested? Or is that kind of like a nice to have type thing?
Well, for me, you might see like a bit of a, like a pattern. So my first army was Space Wolves. And then I moved over to Age of Sigmar where I played Ogre Maw Tribes. And then I moved back to 40K and I played Guard pretty heavily. And now I'm on
a whole lot of correlation between you and Adam here.
So I don't think that I owned a single female model until I made my Necromunda warband. So for me, it's not something that I need. However, I do know that that representation and being able to see yourself in the position of one of the models on the table, I know that is very important to some women. I'm just not one of them.
Well, look, I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I'm building a Space Marine captain or whatever, I'm putting myself together. I mean, there's a little bit of me in each one of my character models.
I mean, I get it. I mean, I do have the War Mistress War Boss that is available for purchase right now from GearGuts.com.
Nice.
So,
well done.
It's just an orc. It's not a female orc. It's not a male orc. It's just an orc with a commissar cap on. And like I said, like, I know that there are females out there who are kitbashing like entire female Space Marine armies, and it's super important to them, and they cannot enjoy the game without that. So those people should be allowed to make that, and they should be able to do and share their work with others and not be harassed.
Absolutely agree.
I do actually agree with that. Like, I think that, the arguments of should female Space Marines exist in the lore, if you're coming at it from a purely intellectual capacity, I think is a fine discussion. Mm-hmm. To berate someone because they chose to those model aesthetics is a much different discussion that I do not agree with.
And whenever if you're sitting at home right now and you ever have the opportunity to tell someone what they should do with their models, go look in the mirror and tell yourself instead, because it's their models. They can do whatever the hell they want with them.
And I mean, that people get so fired up about it, but like, you really need to look at the hobby and see how multifaceted it is, and then realize that not all of those facets are going to be important to every person.
Well said.
That is the hardest thing to do when we're talking online about models, about this, about how we experience the hobby. And look, I don't, this is not like me throwing up a rally cry for female Space Marines. Like, I also do not care what you do with your models. Other than what you want, I care what you want to do with your models, because I care about what you want, you know, not what the actual product is, if that makes, does that make any sense?
Yep. Yeah, for sure. They're plastic war dollies. Like, literally how somebody else plays with their war dollies has no effect on me whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, you seem pretty grounded because, you know, I mean, again, if you wanted to play Tyranids because, you know, that we consider the Hive Tyrant largely to be female and she's a beast. I could be wrong. Maybe, is the Hive Tyrant, do we even think about that as a female anymore? Maybe because of the big giant Forge World. Was that a Dominatrix at one time? Dominatrix or something?
That was the one that spawned the Tyranid Warriors. As in, like, that was the Super Turvigan.
Yeah.
Termagants. Dominatrix is these Warriors. But, you know, you assume these things have been named by, you know, Tyranids are named Tyranids because they invaded the world of Tyran or whatever it was first, or Tyr or whatever. So, you know, they're essentially telling us in the lore that all these names have gone through like a human's construct of naming anyway. So you can call them whatever you want.
It's not a big jump that they were based on aliens and aliens as the queen, you know, and
exactly.
Whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they probably almost got in trouble for how close those models were correlated for a certain edition.
Yeah. That'd be kind of funny. But anyway, where I'm going is that, do you, for the folks that matters to, do we have enough representation in the model line to where people have enough choices, or do you feel like they are kind of shoehorned into one or two different armies?
If you wanted to have the choice of female models, I mean, you're pretty much shoehorned unless you want to do like a bunch of conversion and deal with a bunch of angry lore mongers. In my experience, though, I haven't, like, there definitely are some women who need that. They need to be able to see a female in their army. But I would say there's equally as many women who don't care.
Yeah, fair.
So
fair enough.
I'm not sure. Like, honestly, like, I would love to see more. Like, I would love to see some female guardsmen. I would love to see more guard characters, full stop. However, I would love to see some of those characters be women.
Have you ever seen any of the Tanith line?
No, I haven't.
So the models, fortunately, that I was able to get, in large part from a friend, but they're an older GW cast. In fact, almost I have 60 of the Tanith metal models, of which the blister packs, right, the old GW blister packs they came in, most of them come with one, like, it whether it was two or three models, one of them was a female model. Mm-hmm. And it's been pretty cool. Because in the books, right, like Dan Abnett's books on Gaunt's Ghost, there are females in the story, right? It's not just an all-male regiment. And because they come in and they pick them up at one of the point where they pick up an entire, like, hive group. And so, like, you're talking about, like, Necromunda and whatnot. And mm-hmm. and there's aspects to that that play into it. And so I've actually taken some of the Necromunda, the what's the name of the gang?
Eschers.
And so I've combined some of those and kitbashed some of those models in to kind of help get that ganger feel to the Gaunt's Ghost. But yeah, my Gaunt's Ghost regiment is actually a healthy portion of it is female. I've even gone with some third party models that were like Cadian female models and brought those in too.
Yeah, I love it. But I also feel like if you want to be a lore stickler and you want to be like, well, we can't have female space marines, then you should be a stickler as well to put the females into the guard line. Sure. Because almost every single regiment has women in it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't be such a stickler for lore and be so, like,
I'm looking, like, at Sergeant Ripper Jackson right now.
So great. but, like, you can't be so selective to you know, basically confirm your own biases.
Yeah, fair enough. And look, I don't know where we're going with this conversation other than I want to consistently be an advocate for keeping our hobby as accessible as possible to any folks that want to enjoy it. And I do think that we're kind of at a point where we could have a discussion about it. And you know, if you take any, look, I don't expect anyone to, like, really alter their behavior, but something, you know, just know that there are certain things that are important to other folks, and you might make life easier for them that day if you take anything from it.
Yeah, just be nice, especially to new people coming into your hobby. And I would just say, like, don't assume that they're in the hobby for the same reasons that you are. Once you can sort of separate yourself from their hobby, not only will they feel a lot better about sharing their work, but you will also feel better about your hobby as well, because you're putting more energy into what you want to do and not worrying so much about what other people want to do.
I don't think we could say it better than that.
Well, it's been a good episode, everybody.
Yeah, I think we're just going to close it up right there. Well, look, Tanya, they can find, I'll put a link to your show in the show notes so people can find that, your new project you're working on. And I really enjoyed having you on, and thanks for everyone sticking with us and listening to this. And, you know, let us know your thoughts. I mean, you're really, we're all in this together.
That's right.
Well, gentlemen, Tanya, thanks for coming on. Thanks for joining me today. And we'll
thanks
see you
for
next
having
week.
Me.
My absolute pleasure.
Yeah, real pleasure.
See you, everybody.
See ya.
Night.
Bye.
Make my day.